everyone, and welcome to our webinar titled Appy Vets. My name is Sylvia Janska, and I'm a vet and a co-founder of Flexi, and I will be your chair for today. First of all, thank you to PetsApp for hosting this webinar, where we're going to be discussing about digital tech and apps and how they can help support veterinary teams. And thank you to all of our listeners for joining us tonight. Hopefully we will answer all of your questions. If you have any more questions than what we've already received, please pop them anywhere you want in the chat, in the Q&A. We'll pick them up and I'll try and divert them onto our panelists. And thank you to all of our panelists today. I'll do a quick intro and I'll then pass on to them to do a bit more in-depth intro. So we've got Tom Jenkins, also known as the tech genius from 007 among some of his friends. He's the co-founder and CEO of PetsApp. Then we have Victoria Johnson, who is the CEO of VetCT. Hello. And Anthony Chadwick from the Webinar Vet. So if I can pass on to each of you in turn, so you can tell us a bit more about yourselves and your respective apps, that'd be great. I think we can start that way. And then, I have a bunch of questions that flooded in already. So shall I hand over to you, Tom, first? You're first on my list.
Yeah, thank you for hosting, Sylvia. It's a huge weight off my shoulders to be here as a panelist. So thank you. It feels slightly strange. I'm Tom. I'm the CEO and co-founder of PetsApp. I'm a vet and I've run veterinary groups both here in the UK and out in China.
Wow, fantastic. Thank you. Victoria?
Hey, thanks, Sylvia, and a big thank you to PetsApp again for this. It's super. So my name is Victoria Johnson. I'm representing VetCT. We're a teleconsulting company, and our app is about helping vets get very fast access to specialist support and reassurance.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. And Anthony?
I think we've all done really well. We've managed to unmute, which is always a good sign.
Good start, yeah, definitely.
So I'm Anthony Chadwick, another vet as well. Set up Webinar Vet about 11 years ago, basically to make veterinary education more accessible and affordable to vets across the globe. We've got probably about 70,000 vets and nurses in well over 100 countries who listen to webinars with us. I also kind of feel that there was no online space 11 years ago. We sort of helped to create that space and create the word webinar or bring it into the dictionary. And the new problem, I think, and we're going to talk about it, I know, is around recruitment and resource. And so we bought Simply Vet about 2 years ago, and we're here to try and be a part of the solution for the recruitment and resource problem that we've got going in the profession at the moment. And finally, Custodian, which I'm very excited about, and I know you are as well, Sylvia, of WikiVet, which is a fabulous resource that Sylvia helped to create with a number of other people over 10 years ago for vet students. But I think it's useful for all people as a sort of Wikipedia of the vet world, and really excited to be chosen to sort of help continue that journey, which is so important after this year we've had, where vet students have struggled with some of the universities to give them the sort of online education that they've deserved. So that's me wearing two or three hats there today.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Anthony. And I think what you mentioned about there being an opportunity that you saw and, you know, kind of grabbed, and you saw that there was a demand and a desire for this, I think that would be something nice to sort of start off our discussion with around the topic of demand and capacity, because I think it'd be nice to sort of describe from each of your perspectives why you felt that digital was the answer or part of the puzzle in helping to streamline, you know, vet services and help the businesses and help the teams. So, and we had a couple of questions on this topic. So maybe if I sort of ask a more specific question and whoever wants to answer first, one of the questions that came in was, Why should I take on a new service when we are already rammed in the clinic? And how will the teams find the time to learn and implement the service? So if you can maybe answer obviously this question in response to, you know, how you felt the connection with your app and your service. Anybody wants to start?
I'm happy.
Go on, Victor.
Well, I think it's an excellent question, actually, and it's certainly something that we actually do get asked, like when we sort of say to people, hey, we've got this new service and a new app, and they're like, oh, no more change, nothing new. I think we're all in a time right now where people are massively overstretched. People have change fatigue, they're tired, they've had to change their teams, their systems, their protocols, everything. And I think it is a really big ask to ask people to look at something new. But I think you have to sort of see it in the light, really, that the world has shifted, really. We've seen a big paradigm shift in the way that the whole world is moving more in line. I think we have to see it in view of the fact that we're in a really tricky spot as a profession. There is a real problem with recruitment, retention, resource, enough people. We're all very squeezed in terms of time. What can help? Well, more vets will help at some stage, but that's not a quick fix. Keeping more vets in the profession, that will help too, but these are not quick fixes. But potentially technology can be part of the solution. And if there's ways and tricks and technology, useful things that we can do that can potentially help us support our teams better, make our teams feel that they enjoy their jobs more, help them have a better life-work balance, keep them happier in their jobs, learning faster. I mean, a lot of us are very involved, very much yourself, Anthony, in education as well. If there's ways that we can embrace technology to help us enjoy our jobs more, stay in our jobs more, learn more as we work, and that's got to be a good thing for the profession.
And you mentioned a bit of a sort of work life. So I don't want to sort of divert away from the question because I'd be quite keen to hear from the others. But before we move on, one of the other questions that actually came in was, you know, do you have a particularly sort of within VetCT for you, do you have any metrics to show that your incorporation or people working with vets working in your team have better well-being or motivation or have helped other teams?
That's a really interesting question. So I think from a work-life balance thing, there's something else that technology can bring to us is the opportunity to work online for at least part of our jobs. We very much as an organisation advocate for people, I'm a vet too, having time in the clinic, seeing patients, seeing animals, that's really important, seeing your colleagues, not being in front of a computer screen. But we also as an organisation have a lot of people that work online. And I think if you get that balance right, and we were chatting the other day, I know Sylvia, about this sort of being like a jigsaw puzzle. And I sort of think about online work being the last piece in your jigsaw puzzle. It can be totally flexible, fit around whatever else you're doing, can fit around your school pick up, it can fit around your clinical work, and it can fit around your family, your other commitments, even a social life, heavens forbid. So I think if you can embrace technology to facilitate online role and tremendous flexibility around a job, that can be a really great thing. Metrics is a really good idea. I can tell you that we have a lot of happy people who achieve that balance. It's certainly something we should measure more, I think, actually, is getting metrics of what a big difference that does make. But I confess I haven't got any good numbers on that right now.
No, that's all right. But I think that is something that is particularly valuable for, vets who are employers or employees to see those numbers, you know, how have we improved the well-being or the recruitment or the retention of those vets in practice, as you say. So now, if you have any numbers later on, then please share with us all. Anthony.
You know, probably the most satisfying thing I've done in the 10 years is actually when Mind Matters initiative came out and, you know, the Royal College was setting up what I think is a fantastic initiative. And I went to them fairly early on and said, well, you know, initiatives are great, but it needs to be practical. And so we actually set up an 8-week mindfulness course. And over, you know, the last 4 or 5 years, we've had thousands of vets and nurses from practice, the pharmaceutical industry, the food industry. And what was really satisfying about it was of course, it wasn't everybody's bag. Mindfulness, you know, doesn't work for everybody, or, you know, people don't all embrace it. But we would have people saying, you know, your CPD is good, but this has actually changed my life. I've gone on holiday and I've relaxed. I don't shout at my nurses as much as I used to. And for me, metrics are really important. But, you know, I've had people come to me with those sort of comments when we could meet physically, but also via email. And I think if a company comes into being and it even saves a few people from depression or just having a better mix, that's a good enough reason to set up the company. And, you know, the powerful testimonials that we got were really, you know, quite emotional, because we have such a great job, and yet somehow within all of that, we can lose that and, you know, get upset and not enjoy holidays. I'm off on Thursday, so I'm going to definitely decompress for a couple of weeks, because it's been a long 18 months, hasn't it? But within that sort of thing, I'm less bothered about numbers. If I'm making a difference to two or three people, that's a good enough reason to have set up the business.
That's nicely put. Thanks. No, fantastic. I see Tom wants to join in.
Yeah, I think there's so much to say, but I've just been enjoying listening to the conversation.
Well, you're very welcome to join in.
Yeah, I should, shouldn't I? I should sing for my supper, as it were. But on the stats, on the team engagement stats, on the well-being stuff, what really strikes me about the veterinary sector, veterinary clinics as businesses, is a lot of people use Net Promoter Score to measure the client experience, right? And clinics, veterinary clinics, I did some work when I was at uni validating Net Promoter Score as a metric in the veterinary sector. And you see that benchmark Net Promoter Scores are like 70%, 80%, some people even like 90%. And at that point, they're useless. Like, they're too positive to be helpful. But like, so you've got incredible customer loyalty and customer experiences. And I know we all remember the difficult customers, but we see the same on Pets app. You know, we just surpassed 10,000 five-star reviews on the App Store, this sort of thing. And pet owners are really loving the experience, right? Mm-hmm. There's also something called employee Net Promoter Score. So Net Promoter Score asks, how likely would you be to recommend a business, right, that you do business with? Employee Net Promoter Score asks the team in that business how likely they would be to recommend that business as a place of work. You do benchmarking work on that, and unfortunately, for both vets and nurses, you find employee Net Promoter Scores of negative 20%, negative 30%. The scale, just for those that don't know, is from negative 100% to positive 100%. So we've got this gap between customer Net Promoter Score of positive 80% and employee Net Promoter Score of negative 30%. That gap is everything that we hear about burnout. It's we are pulling down on this finite supply of veterinary team member goodwill. They can't keep doing what they're doing. So people saying that we're too busy to change, I hear you, I get it. I've operated veterinary clinics. You're putting out fires all the time. You just got to keep those doors open. It's hard, but we can't keep doing what we're doing. So change isn't an option. Mm. What we've got to do is we've got to, anyone from the Pets App pack watching this will laugh because they've heard me talk about this a lot. I'm a big advocate for theory of constraints. And that's where you identify the one bottleneck in your process and you work on that. If you're not working on your bottleneck, you're wasting your time. So let's think what our bottleneck is. Our bottleneck is people, right? So let's look at, are our systems and processes, are they serving our people? Is subjecting people to the tyranny of the telephone, making the telephone dictate their workflows, their working day, their priorities, is that serving our people well? If not, the good news is there are relatively small changes that we can make to improve it and hopefully close that gap on employee Net Promoter Score and customer Net Promoter Score.
Just coming back at Tom, because, you know, for the last 5 or so years, I've been saying every business needs to be a digital business or otherwise you won't survive in 10 years' time. Actually, that was completely wrong because we forgot about the pandemic. And, you know, I think I saw a stat 30% of businesses won't survive through the pandemic. I know there's been vet practices closing partly because of staffing constraints. So unfortunately, you know, we can complain as much as we want. Our clients want to see apps and you know, businesses that are digital. I have just had a cat adopt me, and I had to take it to the local practice, and I use the Pets app, and I think it's brilliant. You know, it's saving the client time. The client sets up things when they want, and it's really convenient for the practice as well. And there was the lovely bit at the beginning about Pennard. You know, every time you miss a call, they go somewhere else, and they go to the practice that's more digitally set up than you are. I don't think we can even have a discussion about whether there's a need to digitally transform. There's just a necessity. And tools, you know, like the Pet app that make it easier for your clients to do business with you, if you don't have it and the next door neighbor does, you're at a huge disadvantage, and you probably will really struggle to be around, because also the vets who are younger vets coming through want to work in a practice that is using digital technology. So if they've got the choice between me, who's a bit of an old fart, and somebody like Tom, who's all singing, all dancing apps, they're going to be using Tom. So, you know, I think it's that there's even less of a discussion than there was 2 or 3 years ago when I was trying to convince practices to have, you know, good Facebook pages and things. It's just not really open to debate anymore. Or maybe that's just me being bombastic.
No, I was just going to say that he's absolutely right, that it's more about the way I see it at the moment is we're on that kind of tipping point where people are recognizing, yes, I kind of need to go down this road, but it's sort of what is going to persuade me to or help me see that it's beneficial for my business, for my team, for my clients. Actually I had a couple of questions come in about that, and it's about sort of how do we, as you know, I guess, or you as app founders and users and advocates, mitigate the challenging things or the negative things about digitizing some of the services. And so one of the questions, for example, was, I'm worried about the cost of taking on a new app for something that doesn't necessarily save me much money. So is that, I think that's a really, really good question, because at the end of the day, it's a business and they need to be sustainable. So could you discuss this a little bit? I think Tom was, I cut you off, Tom, so you're welcome to start.
I'm a terrible panelist and cutting off the host, so apologies for that. I'll learn to behave myself. But I just want to say thank you to Anthony for his kind words there, and I'm glad to hear he got on with the app. And I think it's not just other clinics using apps, it's, you know, direct consumer offerings, all this sort of thing. There is a risk of disintermediation, and what a shame that would be for everyone concerned, you know, if that particular veterinary clinic with its devoted team of people isn't part of this joined up online to offline experience. In terms of the hard money cash return on investment, my goodness, it's a no-brainer. And I know I would say that, but just look at that case study and how many hours that team are being given back every day, and how much you'd have to spend to save that time otherwise, and the number of missed calls they're now not missing. 85% reduction in missed calls. We processed £3.4 million in veterinary clinic revenue through the app. So people are taking revenue directly through the app, as well as the capacity utilization improvement. So really the sort of headline things are monetization of a previously unmonetizable touchpoint, the phone call, capacity utilization improvements, lead generation and client acquisition. So lead generation from your existing clients, but also client acquisition. Now, which of those are most relevant to your business is where any provider you go to, you want them to have the operational flexibility to adjust to what is an operationally incredibly complex business. Veterinary clinics are operationally complex. My background is in operations. That's what makes them fun. You know, for a geek like me that likes that stuff, they're complicated, right? So having an all singing, all dancing product that only works if you use it in an exactly certain way, no, you're not going to get the return on investment from it, because it's probably not going to fit your particular apple cart that you've assembled to overcome operational hurdles. And it's not just Pets app. There's other things that just make a whole lot of sense. You know, if you think of allowing people to consume their continuing education online, at least in part, I mean, what would we have done as a profession if we couldn't do that, if we couldn't attend these online sessions? And Victoria, with VetCT, the fact that you can beam in a specialist, almost like they're there beside you, educating you, lifting you, is fantastic. And I think this is the thing about the referral side of things. Often there can be a push for early referral these days, and I worry that that de-skills the frontline, the first opinion professionals. And we know that the more you look, the more you find. So the better you are, the place you are to advocate for your pets. But everyone's behavior, even people with the best of intentions, follow their incentives, right? And if, and for a lot of us vets, the incentive is to find an interesting case that we get to work up. Mm-hmm. If the idea is that actually you won't get to work up that case, with all the best of intentions, we might not look as hard as we used to, right? And that will let down the patients. So the idea that I could actually improve the standard of my practice while also having the support of a specialist, but without having to immediately give up the case as soon as something interesting crops up, there's return on investment there too, right? It's just amazing, the opportunity there.
Thank you so much, Tom. That's really good of you to say that. I mean, it's interesting. I think the statistic that Tom came up with earlier about the employee net promoter scores is very depressing for our profession. I mean, this is really sad, that massive gap. I think anything we can be doing that helps us recruit more vets, retain more vets, stops the burnout, as Anthony was saying earlier, anything that can keep these vets in the profession, that in itself is the biggest cost saver you can imagine. I mean, the cost of trying to recruit and retain vets, and the cost of not having enough vets and having to make those gaps, to fill those gaps somehow, is just very painful for practices. So I agree. I think when you can find, and I think you've got to be selective. I think there's an awful lot of stuff out there. There's a lot of noise, and it is probably about each practice trying to identify what they need and what are their pain points and how this technology can help. Because it is hard to make changes and it is hard to adapt to new digital technology, but my goodness, it's worth it. Because if you can get to a stage where, as Tom says, you're not missing calls, you're giving your vets a chance to access online education and get their CPD certificate via a QR code, as Anthony's doing, all of these things that are massively time saving, and you can actually make sure that your vets are learning as they work, which is something we really advocate for. Learn from every case you see, keep that case in the practice, make sure that you're growing your skills every day. Every vet goes home and feels like they've had a really great day and made a really big difference, and that's why they went into the profession, and that's why they're going to stay in the profession. So these things alone are massive cost savings. On top of that, some apps, as we're all saying here, can help you generate revenue. We can actually put a fee to the client around veterinary time, and as Tom's saying, veterinary time is incredibly precious. Time wasted on phone calls, etc. A lot of people waste an awful lot of time on hold to referral centres trying to get hold of referral specialists when they could be in a consult, and actually when the specialist in the referral centre could also be in a consult. So things like that. Why isn't there a cost to that? That really should be something that we can monetize in our profession.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think it's also, as Tom sort of hinted at it, it's, you know, really, it's a process. You have to know for your business what works, what challenges you have operationally, culturally, and what is the number one tech that could help you solve that. You know, you might come to one before another. So you just need to know, yeah, what's necessary for the business, the team, the individual vets, the clients, obviously. And one of the questions actually that came through was, who benefits the most from the use of the apps in clinics? Is it vets? Is it vet techs, receptionists, pet parents? I think, you know, I can answer that question in numerous ways. Can I hand over to Anthony?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. I follow a guy called Brendan Burchard, who's an online guru. And, you know, he was talking very much about just use apps. And in the case of that question, and using the Pennard example, if you've got three people on the phone, I don't know what Pennard have, but they're still missing that number of calls, and suddenly they get an app in and they're missing hardly any of the calls. There were two ways of doing it. They could have got another five lines into the surgery, and they could have got another five receptionists. Finding those people would be difficult. Or you use an app that allows you to automate it. go back to people at a relevant time, or they can book their appointments themselves. I mean, just the fact now, if you try and with a lot of companies, you know, right, I want to book an appointment. Do I have to ring up, or can I just go on their site and say, oh, they're free between 10 and 10:15. Bang, I've just put an appointment in. The cost of that is massively lower than speaking to somebody on a phone. And obviously, we've seen this with the NHS apps that are out there now, you know, trying to get onto, is it 111 or whatever the number is. The NHS recognise that, that is massively more expensive than catching somebody on an app. I think it was the Babylon app, where a lot of it is kind of message bots. So they know, right, you know, this is the next question. That's the sort of technology that can make a massive difference. And, you know, has obviously started to be even adopted more during the pandemic. But, you know, my experience as a client was also, how convenient is this? I've just filled in some more details. I'm filling the details in, so there's no spelling mistakes. The telephone number is right. How many times as a vet practice have you rung up a number? Oh, number not recognized because somebody's made a digit mistake. You tend not to get your own telephone number wrong, whereas other people can. So just being able to add that extra information, you know, what's my cat's favorite toy? All of these sort of things that you can add just makes it feel like that client, that practice cares about you. So I think tools are massive. And my attitude towards that idea of who benefits, I like it if it's a win-win-win. The practice benefits, if the animal benefits, if the people who've developed the app benefit, then everybody's a winner. And for me, it's about us adding value. If we add enough value, you know, as I think we do with Webinar Vet, I mean, the views tripled last year. We were there as a service. I jokingly say to people that I've actually been preparing for this pandemic for the last 11 years. I just didn't realize. You know, it was there as a service. It created value. And coincidentally, you know, our turnover went up quite a lot last year. But I'd like to think with things like the COVID-19 BVA Sunday webinars that we helped to host, you know, we added a lot of value back to the profession as well.
Tom, do you have something that you could join in with?
Yeah, definitely you added value for sure. What I want to say on this one is pet owners love it, right? And there can be a little bit of a culture of like, I don't, you know, where we set up the pet owner as an enemy, and it's almost because they love it, we don't want to give it to them. You can sometimes sense that sometimes. We have to be really careful of that. They're not the enemy. Because why do pet owners love Pets App? They love it. They say things like, I love Pets App, 5 out of 5, because I'm not bothering the vet, you know, when they're busy. They can come back to me at a time that suits them. It's super easy to pay. This with my veterinary biases, I did not expect someone to come on an app store and say 5 out of 5. It was really easy to hand over money to the veterinary clinic. Like that's what they're saying. You made it easy for me to pay. Wonderful. I didn't clog up the phone lines for someone with a more urgent issue. Right. The majority of people are very reasonable and very considerate. And when we did our customer research right back when we were first starting Pets App, there were people that described their beautiful relationship with their vet. And there are people that said, you know, they didn't want to, that they had more issues and more queries, but they didn't think, they thought they might be silly questions. They were worried about surfacing them. So the reasons pet owners love it is all the same reasons why it helps the veterinary teams. And it certainly does help the veterinary teams. We've seen that the practices that are getting the most out of Pets App, it's a minority of interactions that are actually vet-led. It's your veterinary receptionists and your veterinary nurses that are really taking the lead here. And how are they taking the lead? I could go on forever on this, so I won't. I'll just give one example. When I would admit a patient to the clinic for a procedure, I would, as politely as possible, say to the pet owner, don't call me, I'll call you, you know, in terms of an update. They inevitably would call me. And when would they call me? They'd call me when I'm sort of, you know, trying to take blood from a fractious cat, or I'm scrubbed up in theatre, can't get to the phone, whatever it might be, an inconvenient moment, right? No problem, I'll call them back. Well, that is a problem, but okay, I'll call them back. I call them back, I get their voicemail. that's no fun. Okay, so now we're saying our bottleneck is veterinary team members, and you've got me trying to call someone back, trying to catch them on a voicemail, someone else chasing me around the hospital because they're not sure where I am at any one moment, trying to get me the message to call back, all this sort of thing. It's just completely inefficient. Now we've got this beautiful thing where a veterinary nurse can snap a picture of the pet, send it on the app to the owner, but, you know, didn't they do well? They'll be ready to collect at this time. Someone can send through a payment request so that they can pay ahead of time. Takes seconds. It also highlights the clinical standard of care. The owner is now exposed to the great work that the nursing team does. There's one example where the nurse messaged an owner, said she's just about to prepare the pet's lunch. The owner somewhat cheekily replied, he loves chicken. But the nurse replied, I'm cooking some for him now. And the next picture was her hand feeding the dog some chicken. Importantly, she was doing all of this anyway. But if I was the vet there, there's no chance on discharge I would have said to the owner, and by the way, Karen, the nurse for Fluffy, hand fed him some chicken. Like, I just wouldn't, it wouldn't occur to me to say it. You know, we're busy. It's not that I wouldn't have wanted to, but I might never have known, right? So this value is all being communicated to the pet owner in a much shorter period of time, in a way that the team is in control of. Right? The nurse can pick the moment in her day, in his day, when they take that picture and they send it across the owner asynchronously. So it's much more efficient for them, and it's an improved experience for the owner. It's exactly what Anthony said. It's win-win.
It's win-win for everyone. Sorry, Anthony, go on.
I was going to say, and Tom, you know, you've got two friends who are having a coffee together the next day, and one of them says, I rang up the vet three times, didn't hear back from them. I was worried sick about my pet because they didn't get back to me, obviously because they were busy with doing operations and things. But I was really concerned. And finally, at 5 o'clock, I heard that the cat was still alive and had gone through the cat's bay, and they came and everything was fine after that, compared with the other person who then says, oh, well, I got photographs, you know, of how the cat looked at 3 o'clock, and there was somebody actually feeding it a bit of chicken. Do you think there's a chance that the first client might decide to change vets to the second client? I mean, this is where digital, I think, really comes into its own. And if you're not digital, there's a real danger of losing that. And then final one, you know, our clients now are millennials, and, you know, they're actually spending a lot of money on their pets, and they love these sort of things. You know, more so than perhaps some of the older population will. But actually, because of COVID, we've all digitally transformed in the last 18 months. So we're actually all good at doing things online that perhaps 18 months ago, you know, we would have struggled with.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Well, I think your comment on millennials is massive, actually, Anthony. There's some wonderful figure about by 2025, over 75% of the workforce will be millennials. So I think this is coming whether we like it or not. We have to embrace technology. We have to become digital. But I guess I'm going to have a slightly different take on it from you guys, because I think it's there are the benefits of the pet owners are absolutely massive for all the reasons that you guys have described. And it's for me, it's a no-brainer. And we look also very much at the benefits on the vets, which just as Tom's and Anthony's businesses do as well. But one thing we really find, and I'm very interested in this sort of retention of vets during the early stage of their career, there's a very big dropout rate, very big burnout rate of vets in the first 5 years of their career. And it's really interesting, there's been quite a few studies done on this. And in studies on veterinary career motivations, the challenge in learning is absolutely massive. Vets love learning. We're just that type of people. We want to learn, we want to challenge, we want to problem solve, and we want to do a really, really great job for our patients. And we care. I mean, vets just really care. And actually, a massive demotivator is feeling like you haven't done the best for your patient, or your patient just went out the door and you didn't actually get the chance to do much with it or learn from it, or etc. So our focus is very much on trying to help vets learn from every case that they see, because in that instant when you have a case in front of you, you're very motivated, you care, you want to make a difference to that patient. That's why we all became vets. I wanted to do that since I was 13, but that's what brings us into that profession, and I think that's what can keep us there, actually. And if we can find ways to learn whilst we work, it's incredibly time efficient. You're learning from the case in front of you. You're getting your CPD as you learn, as you work. You don't have to leave the practice. You don't have to take a day off work to do that. And you're going to retain that knowledge. This is this concept of real-time learning, active learning. You're going to retain what you learn from that case. So by having a specialist guide you on that case, and we have lots of examples of this, a specialist who can guide you live how to do a bone marrow biopsy, for example, over the video connection. It's just fantastic to do this. You can learn so much from that, and you retain that. And I truly think that extra bit of joy, that I learned something today, I overcame that challenge, I've grown as a vet, that is something important to keep vets in the profession. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, no, I think we're coming up with a lot of amazing positive points, but one of the things, actually, there's a few questions around the topic of how does obviously increasing the access to clients at all hours reduce the stress on the vets and the staff. And I've just sort of worded it as a question from Martin. Thank you very much, Martin. But there's been a few people who asked this similar question in different ways, and he also then followed up, you know, how does this work in practice when you have, for example, a mixed practice. Now, I know PetSap and VetCT and are mostly in small animals, but perhaps looking into equine or farm. So could we sort of pick these two questions apart? Do you want to continue, Vicky?
Press the wrong button then. Just confirm what you want me to answer. So firstly, I think it can help all species for sure. We've started very much with cats and dogs as our initial species. We actually also do an awful lot of work with exotics, which, my lights just went off, sorry. Turning off the electricity here. We do a lot of work with exotics, which is something where I think people feel really a bit nervous about sometimes. Definitely I can count myself in that category, and they need that extra support. But we're also looking at this for equine, because I think supporting vets in ambulatory practice when they're out on the road is quite a lonely time. And I also think, to come to what Martin said, the 24/7 nature is really important. So we actually work as a 24/7, 365 company, Christmas Day included. But what we do find is that when people need specialist support is often at the time when their normal sources of specialist support are not available. So or their normal person in the practice who might support them, the more senior clinical director or whatever. So that's the evenings, early in the morning, overnight, weekends. I think these types of apps and support services that are 24 hours a day can make a big difference. But I'm not sure I've answered your question completely.
No, in part you have. I think, you know, if from your perspective as a specialist, it's something slightly different. And as you say, you know, you're operating 24/7 to provide service for when the vet's usual specialist might not be available. But maybe Tom can touch on, you know, from the more first opinion practice perspective.
For sure. So, the best way to exceed expectations is to start by setting them. I think that's really important. If we set an expectation that you're going to ring us on the phone, maybe any hours, maybe within certain opening hours, and we're going to answer your call within three rings, that's an expectation that we all know practices can't meet. You know, I ran practices and I trained my teams, you know, answer the phone within three rings. And we did all kinds of clever stuff, like putting the ringing phone back through to the busy people in the hospital as if they had time to answer the phone, right? And it's just not a fair expectation. It doesn't work. So this isn't about being accessible to everyone 24 hours a day, you personally on there doing more than you otherwise would have. Certainly not. We need to give veterinary teams a way to do more with what they already have, preferably have a greater impact by doing a bit less. That I think we do need to do a bit less. And so every interaction on PetSap starts with an automated welcome message, and the clinic gets to set that automated welcome message, and it tells them the hours within which the owner can expect to reply, and it will tell them the time period within which they can expect to reply, and it also tells them what the clinic wants them to use the app for and what they don't want them to use the app for. You know, if you're setting an hour reply period, you probably don't want them interacting with you in an emergency via the app. But if you can get the majority of queries going asynchronously through to you, you get to prioritize those queries at a glance, and then you've got an hour to respond. That's absolute magic for your workflows, right? So I get an inbound query coming in and I'm about to go on lunch. I can actually go and have my lunch if I judge that query not to be terribly urgent and come back and respond to that query. And I'm still within the response time period. Now, let's say your practice isn't open 24 hours a day, or even if it is staffed 24 hours a day, you don't want your out of hours team to have to respond to queries. You just set the time window within which they can expect to reply. The owner can still put their queries into the app and you can pick them up again at a time that is convenient for you and your team. So we see this all the time. Someone gets a pet owner gets home from work from a late shift, and they notice that they're low on their prescription diet for Tinkerbell, let's say. And all they want to do is be able to delegate that item from their to-do list while it's front of mind to the clinic's to-do list. If we don't let them do that, guess what? That's where the huge compliance gaps that exist in veterinary medicine, that's where they emerge. Mm. Because Amazon's available, or the supermarket will have a product that looks kind of like what the vet recommended. I'm sure that's good enough. Or they really run low and they buy that bag from the supermarket because the cat's starving, whatever it might be, right? But if instead you allow them to post in the app, could I get some more of Tinkerbell's food? It's a brilliant experience, much better than Amazon. There's no search costs because you know, you have a complete record of what Tinkerbell eats. So you know what I mean when I say, can I get some more of Tinkerbell's biscuits, right? I don't have to even give you full context. And I'm not expecting an immediate reply. And tomorrow your team can pick that up, request payment, and I can come in and collect it, or you know, we can sort out delivery, that sort of thing. So that experience allows you to be accessible when the owner encounters an issue without having to be always on. I think that's the management of expectations that technology allows us to do better than more traditional means.
Absolutely. So in summary, matching expectations, as you say. I think I'll follow that up with another question. You sort of touched on it and we can probably deduct a few things, but to hear it from you directly, Tom, one of the questions is, what is the difference between a web page calendar time sort of reservation connected to a PMS software as opposed to Pets App? It's a very specific question, but I think it's good for clarification of the individual apps here. So
People use Pets App for appointment booking, certainly. But they use it for click and collect ordering of veterinary products, so flea and tick medication. You know, about 40% of interactions on Pets App involve someone buying a product. About half of those are flea and tick, sort of parasiticide products. 45% would be chronic medications. About 5% is prescription diets. And remember, this is from their local veterinary clinic that they have that direct relationship with, that they have in America, what they call the VCPR. So you can prescribe, you know, do a re-prescription, that sort of thing within regulations. So there's just the diversity of use cases. It might be inpatient updates. It might be while the owner's pet is in the hospital. As we said earlier, the veterinary team gets to update them on the status of the pet. It might be settling an invoice. It might be chasing bad debt. There's all kinds of use cases here. And which one you want to lay on first for your practice, again, comes back to this theory of constraints. What's your bottleneck? Is it phone calls? You know, are the phones ringing off the hook? Do we need to reduce phone calls? Is it the customer care? Is it the nurse's time? Is it giving your team time back? Is it how you want to manage your click and collect ordering? Whatever it might be. Is it appointment booking? Whatever it might be. There's so many applications here. Rather than chucking these all at your team at once, we don't do that. What we do is we work with you to identify what's the quick win for your team. How do we very quickly communicate the what's in it for me to your team? How do we show them that this makes their lives better so that they can then deliver value to the pet owner and deliver value to the business? It's got to work for everyone.
Fabulous. Thank you, Tom. And Victoria, how about you? I mean, there is a few standalone apps like yours. So how does your stand out?
So in terms of where we sit, which is in a sort of slightly different space, we sit very much in the vet to vet, vet to specialist type area. I mean, essentially, you use our app in order to, as a vet, seek a secondary consultation from another vet who is a specialist or potentially a mentor or somebody you can coach and help with your professional development, etc. So it is a different space. So Tom mentioned the VCPR. So where we operate, we don't need to worry about the VCPR because we are a vet-to-vet advice service. So it's totally different, and the licensing and the regulations and everything is very, very different about the way that we work. So we're a group of 185 specialists covering everything from dermatology, dentistry, radiology, everything, exotics, the whole lot. And why are we different? We are actually the only app doing that right now, to be honest. We are the only one. Yay, good for us. We enable people to essentially very quickly create a case where they are sending a video potentially of a neurological patient, neurological exam, for example, photographs of an eye, dermatology photographs, lab results, etc. Anything really, or just a question, just a quick question. We get a lot of people who actually just send us, I want to chat to a specialist about this rabbit anaesthetic that went wrong yesterday, or they want to do some clinical audit, or they want to... we had one last week, actually. He wanted to look at why a skin graft hadn't worked in his practice, and could he talk to a soft tissue surgeon for half an hour and look at three other cases that hadn't worked and learn from that and improve. So it's a lot about sort of trying to improve practice standards. It's a lot about vets wanting to learn and grow. And what this leads to is very happy teams, to be honest. And we're starting to see this becoming a bit of a recruitment tool. You know, we've got this service. Isn't that a great way for you as a vet, a veterinary leader in your practice, to support your team and show your team that we're invested? We get quite a lot of people who, we do this in two ways, as a pay-as-you-go or as a subscription service, but we get quite a lot of practices that actually subscribe to this as a way to support their teams and show that they're invested in their teams. And then they can still charge it out to the client, which is really nice. And the clients love it. The pet owners, if you tell a pet owner or your dog, or you need to consult a specialist about this and get some specialist input, they're never going to be disappointed with that.
They will never say no.
Never say no. Oh, my dog's special. And then they'll send you the videos. And it's so cool, actually, what you can diagnose from videos. We have such amazing people, the neurologists. I mean, just what they can tell from a video of a dog on a neuro exam, it just astounds me how much they can get from that. But it's a great way to learn. It's a really good thing. And so yeah, that's how we're different. We are vet to pet. Vet to vet. We are a different type of thing.
I really there's a lot of controversy around telemedicine, and I 18 months, 2 years ago, we started looking at it because we felt there was a danger. You know, again, if vets don't embrace digital and telemedicine, somebody else will. If vets decide not to look after fish, somebody else will look after fish. So for me, it's a huge opportunity. And I think there's different levels of it. I think there's three types of telemedicine. I absolutely love Victoria's model because it's just a great way to learn. The number of times, you know, with my dermatology hat on, I sat, obviously wrote a letter to them, but then also explained, you know, you've got to give 3 weeks of antibiotics. If you give a 10 days and some steroids, the steroids will kind of hide the improve, you know, they'll make it look better than it is. You stop, 3 weeks later, it's back again. They're the sort of messages that, you know, Victoria and her team can be really good at. We've then got the opportunity of bringing telemedicine into the individual practice, which I think is really important because who knows Tinkerbell the best? Is it the group that are sort of remote somewhere in the ether who don't know anything about that cat, or the people who've got the history in front of them, but for various reasons, the woman is an elderly lady who is housebound, to have that consult in her house, you know, is going to be a lot better than necessarily bringing a cat, as I've experienced over the last couple of weeks, who's a bit wild, into the practice. So I love those two models. I'm not so keen on the model where, do you really know who this cat is? Is this cat under your care? So for me, you know, practices should be bringing telemedicine in either, you know, by using specialists or having that ability to do it themselves, you know, within the practice. And I think, you know, Victoria's absolutely right. We have the same thing where we have a video library now. We have several thousand hours of webinars. And I remember a lovely case where a gentleman came back to us and said, had this really difficult cat that I couldn't stabilize its diabetes of. I listened to people like Ian Ramsey, you know, a couple of other very erudite vets speaking about diabetes, brought all that information together, got the cat sorted. Well, if that isn't reflective learning, I need to know what is. So it's a fabulous way of learning on the job, but also having that resource very close to hand. The final thing I would say, you know, for me, our kind of ideal client is the GP who just wants to get better. We want to have the world's most confident vets using our service. And if they can watch a webinar, learn one thing from that webinar that they're going to do differently in their clinical practice, it's going to improve the way they do things. The other week, I was listening to a Protexin webinar all about B12. Now, I don't practice anymore. It's interesting, you know, history repeats itself. 30, 40 years ago, when I was a student, a lot of vets would put a bit of pink and a bit of white in the needle and inject it. Now, I'm not so sure the white bit I agreed with, but actually the B12 is such an important vitamin, you know, things like pancreatic insufficiency. If you don't get the B12 right, the pancreas probably won't work as well. So having those sort of things where a GP goes away and says, do you know what? I realize I need to think a bit more about when I use B12. To me, that has been a successful hour spent with your time. And of course, the old-fashioned way for vets who are less than 10 years qualified, you might have had to travel 30 miles up the road to get that piece of information and then 30 miles back again. And at the same time, we're also using, 30 miles, 60 miles worth of petrol, which costs money, but actually it's also costing the environment. And when we hear all about the problems with the environment, you know, I'm a hugely keen environmentalist. And I think this sort of technology also can help with the environment. And we've all got to, in every single business, got to be considering that.
That was fantastic, Anthony. Thank you. And I just wanted to you started talking about learning and reflective learning, and you know what Victoria touched on, and you continued. But we have one question from Teresa, who is from the Surrey Vet School, asking about opportunities for students and kind of incorporating sort of apps into a teaching portfolio for students. Can you tell us something about that, Anthony? What are your thoughts, or what have you tried, or what are the opportunities with WebinarVet and WikiVet?
Well, there's definitely opportunities for EMS, if that's partly what she's also asking. I'm not sure if she's a vet or a vet student. But, we've had a load of really powerful testimonials this year from students who've said, you know, the vet schools have closed down. Some of them have done learning better than others. Most of the vet schools have some spaces, you know, often they don't do dentistry or exotics as well as maybe they should do. Obviously, you know, some are better than others. And again, they will be struggling with shortages in the same way that practices are. I think developing as we want to that repository, which is already there, but we want to develop it further as that kind of encyclopedia for vet students to go to, where there's this resource that they can use, not only helps the UK vets, but obviously helps vets all over the world, also in developing countries. And I think if we can help with learning across the globe and bring that standard up, the vets are more happy because, as Victoria said, they're happier with that sense of achievement of a difficult case that they were able to sort. But actually, in the end, the reason we all do this job is to make animal welfare better. And of course, you know, we're helping with that as well. So I'm really excited about WikiVet and how, you know, we can also start that journey of this is the best job in the world, and yet we lose so many people. If we can really encourage people through, you know, WikiVet and through their student journey, I think it's a fabulous new thing that the Royal College are doing with these graduate practices that people can go to. Because I know I stuck in the profession, but my first two years were not good. I didn't have nice bosses particularly. And, you know, other people could have left the profession at that time. So I think it's really important that for those young vets 5 years in, they have really, really super experiences. And this is where finding the right practice for them, you know, with this program that our CVS have been starting, I think is also essential. So apps can't do everything. They're part of the picture of how we solve this problem.
Yeah, I think, as Victoria said, looking at it as a jigsaw puzzle is a great analogy. And before we move on, Tom, does Pets App work with students at all at this stage?
Yeah, we had a great experience with the Global Veterinary Careers Summit, and just the number of students engaging with us was just fantastic. You love to see it. When I was a vet student, I was already a bit of a data and business geek, I have to admit, having wanted to be a vet all my life. That was on lock. And there was this great group of practices. Just got so much love for this group of practices in Leicester, the Part Veterinary Group. And they really just, they can't say enough positive things about them. But when I was talking about validating Net Promoter Score as a research project at uni, they were the ones that facilitated that. And they had no incentive to let this, you know, know-nothing vet student come in and help sort of interrogate their business data. But they did, and hopefully they got something out, and I got a lot out of it. And I would love to pass that on. We got a lot of really cool insights at PetsApp that could make for some really, I mean, if you're anything like me, I don't think many people are in terms of the data geekery, but there's some really cool research projects that I think we could collaborate on and facilitate. So if there's anyone out there that wants to do some of that stuff, all you have to do is reach out. While we're on the subject of learning, Victoria talked about the in-clinic person that you rely on for some support and information. One really cool thing on PetsApp is if you have a query come in or you work in a case, you can hand off to any colleague in your team, and you can hand off with a private note to them. So let's say an owner shared a video or shared a photo or shared some context or some information. You could hand it off to that colleague and say, what do you think of this? And they can hand it right back to you, but with another note saying, you know, I think you should be looking at doing this, this, or this, or they can jump in and help with the case. So it's a collaborative platform as well. And that you love to see that kind of collaboration happening within a veterinary team, even across clinics that are part of the same practice, that can happen. And it's even within a single site location, how often do we not know where each other is in the building, especially if you've got this sort of co-opted, adapted townhouse and someone's on the top floor in the lab and you're down in the basement. I think that can be helpful.
That sounds like every vet practice I ever worked in, Tom.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so many like that. I just had a quick thing to say on the students. So we actually teach about 800 students at the moment in the US. So we actually create online courses in radiology for schools that in the US, quite a lot of large universities in the US, and particularly those with distributed models, actually, where they didn't actually have enough specialist radiologists on site to do that work. But it's been really interesting. And we actually also teach residents and interns in some US and UK schools as well. But I think by being again clever with technology, you can actually make these courses really fantastic, and you can add an element of gamification, and you can have these little micro learning experiences and little short, fun, interesting ways for people to learn. And I think when you're a student, that's massively attractive, and we get really good feedback about this. But where we're trying to go with that is actually to bring this specialist support to students as well, and new graduates, because I think that's a very difficult transition, the student to new graduates. I certainly really struggled with that. And if we can sort of wrap some specialist reassurance or some mentoring reassurance or some help you build up on your own personal development goals through that period, then there's some really wonderful impacts we can have on making that quite stressful time just a bit easier. And we already actually see quite a lot of the final year students enjoying this idea of potentially discussing with a specialist cases that have or haven't gone well, or other ways of dealing with them, and etc. So we have to be obviously very careful that we work with universities on that. We don't want to conflict with the way that they teach or train. That's massively important. But there's quite a good place for this, particularly in the distributed schools, which I think are going to increase in the coming years, because the distributed schools quite often are sending students out to different practices. And when they go out to those different practices, the veterinary hospitals and universities are doing a really good job of choosing those practices. But sometimes it's difficult to know exactly what level of support or training or teaching the students are getting in those practices. So to give them another level of support or education is a pretty cool thing, and can help with the distributed model. My colleague Liz is telling me that we give 3 months to students free and 3 months to new graduates free, because this is something I really actually believe in, and we really, really want to support this difficult time.
It's it's interesting. I think this is where, you know, with diagnostic imaging, online really comes into its own, because if you think about it, if, you know, we've had lectures on diagnostic imaging and you are that close to the screen. Whereas if you're at, you know, a big conference, it can be a mile away and somebody's trying to show you a very discrete lesion, that can be really, really difficult, or even, you know, in a lecture theatre. So the fact that you can be right up close and personal with those lesions while the professor is explaining it to maybe 30 people or 50 people or 100 people, that to me is a much more effective way of training on diagnostic imaging than having people, you know, 50 foot away from a big screen in a lecture theatre or whatever.
You haven't seen my ridiculous idea around that, Anthony, which is I wanted to put like an iPad on a Segway and have a radiologist on it and drive around the hospital to teach different people differently.
Oh, it sounds like fun.
There you are. Tom thinks he's a geeky nerd. I've come up with some ridiculous ideas in my time, but everyone was like, those tall townhouses that have all those steps, how on earth are you going to make your Segway get around?
Victoria, I've got a pound for you here for the meter if you need it.
It's pretty bad, isn't it? I said you'd only be able to see the red line.
Victoria.
It's getting darker and darker. You're in the basement, aren't you? They've stuck you in the basement.
For many reasons, I'm in a rented office currently, and they literally do turn off the lights, it seems.
Okay, well, and on that note, we're already going a bit over time. I'm having a great time, so I don't really want to stop this conversation. But before my last couple of remarks, there was one last question that I'd like to ask. It's a bit broad, but sort of with respect to sort of each of the areas where your apps function, do you expect to see consolidation coming in, or are we still what stage are we in when it comes to the digital and the apps in the vet profession in the UK and maybe globally?
Consolidation of apps, Sylvia?
Yes.
You see it. You see, IDEX and Covetrus acquiring practice management systems, that sort of thing, but I think there are these buzzwords of modularity and interoperability, and this means that interoperability means the technologies that we use should talk to each other, and modularity means you should be able to pick something that does something really well as a module, and if it's interoperable, it will be able to speak to the other modules that you picked in your sort of ecosystem, right? And I think the problem that can happen is that one provider or one solution tries to do too much. Okay, and I don't want to disparage anyone else's solution, but one thing that is a fact is that most veterinary groups have their practice management system provider under strategic review periodically. Why is it? Because the practice management systems all aren't very good? No, there's some great people with building some great technology. It's because for how much they have to do, the set of day one features that they need to be able to operate as a practice management system, they have to make a compromise in some direction. So some are better inventory than others, some are better electronic medical records than others, etc. Right, and so the idea that we could just bolt on new technologies into this already expansive product and that they will do it well and they will get it right and they will be responsive as the use cases evolve, as the value propositions evolve, as the new technology emerges. Yeah, I think that's a tricky one. You're really pulling into what is known as the innovator's dilemma. A lot of work by a Harvard Business School professor and the late, great Faye Christensen. He talks about the innovator's dilemma, and it's why can't the incumbents, as well funded and as well resourced as they are, why can't they do this themselves? Whether that's a large veterinary group trying to build their own solution or an existing large technology provider trying to create, you know, bolt on this new feature, why can't they do it well? And I think it's that they're already trying to do a lot. They've got to, if you're offering the world, you've got to maintain the world. So there's tech debt there. And that's why there's room for someone like any of our three companies, really, because even
we're all
the great vet CT and the great
we?
Webinar vet are relatively relative minnows compared to Covetrus and IDEX, although you're both companies I very much look up to.
Yeah, well, hopefully we will see soon where we all go.
Sylvia, just a very quick one. I had a company came to me and said, why are you getting twice the number of people on your webinars that we are? And I said, it's because I don't sell dog food. You know, so we all have our specialism. And actually, we see this a lot where, you know, somebody who is great at selling pharmaceuticals or growing veterinary practices suddenly think they're going to be fantastic at doing tech. And I know the particular journey that they will go down because I have gone down some of that journey myself, but I'm now 11 years in and I think we all learn from experience. But I think that it's still very open. I still look at this as a collaborative area. That's why three of us are chatting here. We're not holding it all close to our chest because we want to put the value out so that the vets in the industry benefit from it, because I think that's why we're the three of us, four of us are all vets, and we all want to see just a better profession, I think, don't we?
We all love the profession.
And we do that by collaborating with each other rather than, you know, fighting or disparaging each other.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I think that's beautifully said, Anthony, honestly. I'm nodding, you can't see me, but...
We can see the light.
I know they're moving, aren't they?
On your ear.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very nicely put. Yeah.
We should stay true to our purpose and deliver on our promise. And on that note, what would be sort of each in turn your top one message to our listeners to take away with them today? Victoria, go on.
I think
one thing.
You're super busy. There's so much going on and your team's under a lot of stress, but it is worth looking at digital technology as part of the answer, not something to be an annoyance or a further drain on your time. It is part of the answer.
Beautifully said. Anthony?
If you are not a digital business, you probably won't be around in the next 5 years.
That's quite scary. Tom, do you have something more positive for us? But
I don't know about positive. You've come to the wrong person. No. I would say squeezing in one more booster vaccination, finding a way to answer one more phone call, finding a way to do one more dental is not your bottleneck, right? That's what can become the fire that we're fighting, the particular thing that's front of mind right now. And it is important, and we're all super motivated to do the best for the patient in front of us. But I would take the time, just take a moment to just reflect and think, what is my bottleneck? And then the nice thing is, whatever that bottleneck is, and it probably is capacity, it probably is, you know, the bandwidth of your veterinary team, there are just so many people out there incredibly eager to help you solve for that bottleneck. And I think all three of us are among them. And it's, you know, it's because we're passionate about what we do, but it's also about serving this profession. And I know this, I'm going on a bit here, but I started out in veterinary medicine thinking that the arc of my career would be about increasing the accessibility of veterinary expertise to companion animals. And that's why I headed off to China straight after graduation. And that's still a massive part of what drives me. But it's been a real delight for what's kicked in is increasing the accessibility of veterinary careers for veterinary professionals. And if we can leverage technology to do that, it will be back to what Anthony was saying about win-win-win scenarios.
Fantastic. Thank you, Tom. That is positive note. Win-win-win scenarios. I like that. We can end on that. And I'm very sorry that I didn't manage to get through all of the questions that were either pre-sent or asked during today. I was trying to sort of match the questions to how the discussion was developing. So hopefully I've helped answer most of them. But if people want to, and our listeners want to reach out to all of us, I thought we can sort of take turns and for all of us to let them know where they can reach us or how they can approach us. So if I can start, so I'm here as the founder of Flexi, which is looking at flexible working arrangements for permanent veterinary staff. And you can find me either on LinkedIn or we have a website, which is sort of under development, but it's www.flexi.vet, flexi with a double E at the end. Perfect. How about you, Tom? Where can we reach you?
I'd like to hear from you. So you can head across to petsap.com to learn more about us. You can visit the blog, where we've got many more pieces of content, webinars, blog posts, etc., to help you. You can book a demo there if you want to see the product, and you can drop me a line on LinkedIn, or my email is tom@petsap.com. Feel free to drop me a line there.
Fantastic. Thank you, Tom. Anthony?
Yeah, so I love LinkedIn as well. I think it's a great platform. So if you're not on LinkedIn, it's worth considering. Or Facebook, or anthony@thewebinarvet.com. And obviously, if you're interested in any of our the Webinar Vet site, or even, we haven't really talked about it, but Simply Vet, which is obviously payroll, but also helping practices find the right locum for them, then by all means, chat on either Facebook, LinkedIn, or anthony@thewebinarvet.com. And thanks, Sylvia, for being such a fantastic person as well.
Thank you, Anthony. And Victoria, please.
Thanks, Sylvia. I'll stick it in the chat, actually. I put my email in the chat, and our website is just vetct.com or vet-ct.com. They actually both come to the same place. I'm really excited to learn more about Flexi, actually. I'm going to go have a look. Thank you, Sylvia. And thank you. Thank you for doing that. And it's been a lovely webinar. And thank you ever so much, particularly to PetsApp for setting all this up, and for the excellent technical support as well.
Yeah, it went very, very smoothly, I thought, and I really enjoyed it. So I hope you all did as well, and all of our listeners.
Can you do a little webinar for me, Sylvia, on how to host a webinar? Because you did very well. It is challenging. I've done quite a few of them now. I'm not sure I'm getting any better, where you've got to monitor the questions coming in and then pay attention to what we're saying and pick the right one. I thought you did excellently. It's brilliant.
It's called a woman multitasking. Right, I think on that note, with smiles on our faces, thank you very much to everybody, and mainly to the three of you, Vicky, Anthony, and Tom, and to PetsApp for having us all here. And enjoy the evening, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Thanks. Lovely to see you all.
Bye.
Thank you.